Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Steve, you get off your phone. We've got a podcast to record.
All right, okay, podcasting.
This will actually be the introduction for the wind-up. I'm Scott Tilford. That's Stevie Ward.
Hello.
Hello. You've got various credits to your voice over the years, whether it be the voice of the E4 woman or voices of various video game stars over the years as well.
Yeah, it tends to be, I tend to get cast as voice of computer. So I do a lot of, I can't let you do that, Scott.
Or, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, or for E4 it was... GIF Gaff sponsors entertainment on E4.
I guarantee that we've just sent a portion of the audience back through time about 20 years when that was active. But yes, this is the wind up, the podcast that usually starts the week. I missed it yesterday because, as you can maybe tell from my pipes, I'm still recovering, still a little bit ill, so a little bit nasal. But I've got enough energy and I'm not transmittable right now. So I've came in. And Stevie, well, thank you so much for diving on this podcast.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Why not? So in the wind up, we go through whatever's going on in the industry. Me and you just recorded a little bit of a news video on the state of the industry, the layoffs that are happening. Even as we were recording it, literally, you can probably see it in the news video itself. Your phone went off as an alert to say that even more layoffs had happened over at Media Molecule. So we're going to cover various things that are happening in the industry. I want to talk about Star Citizen apparently finally being feature complete. Its story component is apparently complete. And we also have some artwork leaking for the new Assassin's Creed Red. And the Metal Gear Master Collection is out today, but apparently that thing is a bit of a buggy mess. And Hideo Kojima's not even on the credits. So what's going on with that? But we'll just touch on the layoff stuff because we did do a whole big video on it. But just what's going on? Why is the industry all over the place?
Again, like I think I've mentioned it a couple of times, but this does tend to be seasonal at this time of year that layoffs do happen. A lot of the games that will have shipped over the summer either have or haven't made the amount of bank that they are meant to make. And then a lot of the time studios do see a round of layoffs, especially for like quality assurance teams and people that are really, really, really need to keep their jobs over Christmas. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely sucks, especially, I mean, obviously no studio is better than another studio, but my gosh, Media Molecule, there's so many talented, wonderful people there, and Dreams was so damn good.
We should give a shout out to Dreams.
Oh my God.
Dreams was the coolest idea that anyone's had for a game in quite some time. I'm led to believe that's what Roblox is in regards to being able to make other games. I don't know. I've not played Roblox, but that's some sort of game makey thing. But I really like that Dreams had a really good way of teaching you the ways of building video games, like giving you a better understanding of the ways that things get rendered, movements, animations, etc. It was just so hard to get to grips with for the average person.
I think that it's one of these things that this generation's going to miss out from not having as much. Like, I remember, it sounds really crazy and it's going to show my age, but like, I remember like Repton 3 had a level designer in it. I remember being like sitting
What's
around
Repton 3?
Repton.
What's that?
Okay, if you're listening to this and you actually know what Repton is, you're the coolest person alive and I would like to buy you a pint. Mm. But yeah, there was a level design in it, and Dreams, I think, has been that for a generation of kid tween for that. Mm. And so, yeah, I'm super sad about that. And basically everyone at Media Molecule that thought outside the box to make that happen and created such beautiful games.
Ooh, our backstage fire alarm's going off. I don't know if that's going to be on the recording or not. but I'm determined to keep going. We'll just see how it happens.
I kind of like it. I feel like it adds an air of intensity about this. Oh my God, it's a zombie. Oh my God, they're getting in the room. Get out of there. No! Get out of there. Get out of there.
There's a chance that this isn't actually going through on the the recording itself. There you go. See, I thought if I waited long enough, it would go off. Either they've all burnt to a crisp, or either way, we're going to continue with the podcast.
Yeah.
But don't worry about it.
I thought that was dedication, that instead of actually trying to save our lives, we stayed on the podcast.
Yeah, all for the content. Yeah. I will give Josh Brandamass a shout out as well. Brother is still recovering in his own time. We'll be back as soon as he possibly can. But just all the love to Josh Brown. He's doing as much as he can, and he might be back before the end of the year, but we'll see. But yeah, in regards to the Media Molecule stuff and just how widespread the layoffs are, like we said in the video, and as you said in general, like it is like an annual thing. It is a cyclical thing. It feels like it's worse this year than ever. I don't know if that's just because of the array of studios that it's affecting. Like even CDPR have let some staff go. Naughty Dog have let some staff go. And it is really notable, like, you know, big studios like Media Molecule, and it is projects like Dreams that weren't able to be either marketed correctly, or they weren't discussed correctly, or whatever it was. You could see that game had so much promise. And I remember putting it in, you know, overlooked gems of the year back in like 2019 or whatever it was. But it just didn't come together. Like, it's not like there was a PC version where people could have exported their creations or whatever, because it was one of those things where the people who got stuck into Dreams did make incredible games, like, and even visually they looked, some of them looked like AAA stuff, and for whatever reason they just couldn't find a way to like extend that properly and make it fully work or whatever. But I think overall, looking back on it, like it was a fascinating attempt at something, like for the most part worked. I mean, in the circles that it found,
you're also going up against the behemoth that is Minecraft when it comes to like something that's accessible that gets the kids talking about that. I mean, for the it's dominated most of it, like you're saying, Roblox, like these things have dominated what kids are getting into when it comes to creativity, and they want to do what each other are doing. And I think having that exclusivity makes things difficult as well for everyone to get involved with that.
I always thought like anything like that, because I mean, I had the first two Little Big Planets, and then it was that whole idea of like, I'm going to get this. Aww. And it's like, I love the aesthetic and everything. Like, I've still got like a little Sackboy key ring, and it's like, I always loved
Sackboy.
Yeah, like I always loved everything about that. But it was like, it always felt like you were on that high bar of like, oh, I need to spend time making the fun. And it's like, I know over time, and even in Dreams, like you can do, it's like called dream surfing, where you can just search for what's already available and go play a few levels of something. And that was really cool. But it is one of those things where Media Molecule like have a history of really delving into like the make your own fun kind of stuff. And that definitely finds an audience, but it's hard. And then it's hard seeing something like Roblox take off so much. And it's like, oh, that could have been you guys. Or like that maybe could have been like a wing of what you were putting together could have been in that conversation.
Yeah.
But yeah, either way, we reported on it, or we're reporting on it now, but it is breaking across the day. And like I said, on the video itself, I remember your phone lighting up and it was that news story as we were literally talking about layoffs.
Yeah.
Because those headlines are everywhere. Speaking of something that's been everywhere, Star Citizen, that's somehow still a thing. And the news breaking as we came in to record this is that the single player campaign is apparently finally feature complete. Now, the Kickstarter started way back in 2012.
It did.
Predates me even.
Were you a Kickstarter backer?
No, I wasn't, but I remember it was like such a huge deal. And like, I remember all of the, like, you know, as soon as they showed the trailer, I remember Mark Hamill being in it, and it was like, oh my God, what the hell is this thing?
Yeah.
Anyway, it predates No Man's Sky being mentioned, like Elite Dangerous, like that whole idea of that big space exploration game. That like, I always thought this thing looked really, really cool.
Well,
but then
it didn't predate every big space exploration.
No.
Let us be clear, as the ex-CCP employee in the house, online obviously had been going on for quite a few years before Star Citizen came out.
Totally. I just mean in terms of like the buzz that like No Man's Sky got, where it was like, oh, this is a whole galaxy. Maybe it was just the console side of things, where like we hadn't really got on the console side, we hadn't had something that was like, go live in this space. It feels like No Man's Sky was a big talking point because of that.
Yeah.
And then Star Citizen, you know, like you said, predates everything. But finally feature complete 11 years later. What's your thoughts, Siwi?
I don't believe you. No, I was excited because like I was like, they were like, the alpha is done. I was like, it's always been an alpha.
Right.
Isn't it always been an alpha? But I'm excited. My main thing that I'm calling is that I think all of the tech NFT bras are going to head over to Star Citizen now that NFTs are kind of people are beginning to realize it's bad.
I thought the whole market crashed for that stuff. It was like, I'm sure the highest value
people
was like,
are still pushing.
Yeah.
But I think what would be cool is that if they all went move over to Star Citizen, start buying big ships, start trading ships, like, wouldn't that be cool? I want it
would
to
it?
Work. Yeah. Well, no, but I want it to work. I am.
They need somewhere to go.
I'm a huge fan of the sci-fi universe, especially single shroud sci-fi. obviously, working on EVE, I have to love that stuff. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like the Star Citizen community, I have been to meetups for them with special effect and stuff like that. And they are just the loveliest, loveliest people. The devs are absolutely lovely as
cool.
well.
We should mention, because I mentioned, I don't know if I introduced you on this podcast as industry veteran Stevie Ward, which is your full name at this point. But I did on the news video. But we were writing down all the different things that you've worked on or been part of or whatever, as well as right now, PC Gamer Future Game Show. But we wrote down a bunch of stuff. Games Master back on Channel 4.
Yeah.
And you had EVE Online, Guitar Hero Live, Jurassic World Aftermath, being part of BAFTA Games, Special Effect. You're a Special Effect Ambassador. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different stuff there. It's worth just throwing that in there as a little introduction to Stevie Ward.
Yeah, I am. That's me.
Doing very well. Doing very well.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm just old. Don't worry about it. But the lovely thing about that community and working with Special Effect, the charity, is that I got to hang out with a bunch of different communities and going to Star Citizen meets. Like I think you get this weird idea in your head about any games community being different to what you're used to, or like the Sea of Thieves people are different to the EVE Online people are different to the, you know, the Star Citizen. When you go and you meet them, everyone's just absolutely lovely, creative, and just super passionate about that game and about it coming out and about every iteration of it. And the streamers are lovely. Shout out to Moist Noodle. What an amazing character, like amazing content creator. They're brilliant, and they deserve to have their game, and they deserve to have it come out and have all the success. I think that the contentious part is the discussion, not about the fans, but about how much you should or shouldn't be able to promise a community before a game ships, which is why it all became such a big deal in the first place, and that they kept promising things and things and then nothing got made.
That's a thing to pick apart for a little bit, because like the whole Kickstarter thing, like across the 2010s, like there were so many high profile disasters, like Goddess and Peter Molyneux's approach to stuff. And then you've got like Star Citizen taking ages, but then you also have things like Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, which like, you know, allowed like a Castlevania adjacent thing to come back together. But then that also makes me think of Mighty Number 9, which was the same approach to like a Mega Man game that obviously went sideways as well. But like, what's your thoughts on that stuff? Because like, one, what's your thoughts on Kickstarter stuff and like the viability of it as like a general way of getting something made? And then in general with Star Citizen, what do you think happens next? Do you think they put out just a single player and that gets some goodwill if it's apparently feature complete, or do they have to wait until the entire multiplayer shared online thing is also complete?
Okay, let's take this point.
Bring it down.
Do the first point first, and then I'll talk to that. And then, because these are big, are big discussions.
Give me Kickstarter thoughts.
I think that it was right time, right place. Like just when Kickstarter was starting to get really, really good for that kind of stuff, there was Star Citizen. And you don't often get to be in the right place at the right time for those bits and pieces. And I think that now looking at, you know, all the different stuff that's come up from that, and people wanting to make D&D shows and have Kickstarters for those, and like people are realizing that it's a way to get things made that you would never have been able to get made before. Doesn't matter how ambitious you want it because of how stretch goals work and stuff like that. I think it worked really well for the time. I'm wondering how long that can last.
Right.
And it sounds weird, but when I talk to devs now, like for example, like we were saying with the layoffs and with different big funding groups pulling out from different indie studios, which means that they can't make the games that they've been trying to make. You know, it comes up like, can you do a Kickstarter to keep your staff? And the answer is no one wants to do a Kickstarter.
Right.
Indie studios don't want to have to do that, because aside from different things, I think the worry there is that you lose your share price. If people think you don't have money to continue to develop a game, or that your funding that you did have either through, you know, private equity or wherever it came from has gone. It's, you know, people worry, why are you doing a Kickstarter? Like, did the last game not make enough money? And a lot of studios are incredibly weary of that.
I remember thinking that when Shenmue 3 got announced, and it was on stage at one of the E3s of 2016 from Sony, but it was still a crowd-backed sequel. And it was like, well, surely you guys, Sega, like surely you guys can make this work. But they were leaning on it as well.
I think there's some really cute stuff there you can do when it comes to comms on that stuff, where it's like, well, this is a game that three awesome people from our studio made in their lunch break. we will publish it if they manage to get it made. Here's their Kickstarter. If you like the idea of you know, snakes wearing hats, go and put your money towards it, because we'll judge it based on what the community wants for something. I think that works. I think that,
like, a certain level of production, it just makes it harder.
You need to be able to pay your staff. Like, if you're a two-person indie, then I get it. If you're, you know, if what you need is to make sure that you can pay yourself and you can pay your one person, then I get it. I think it can be, and again, this is a generalization, this isn't for everyone, I think it can be incredibly irresponsible to just say, like, we're just going to fund our entire game studio based on a Kickstarter, and the livelihood of the 20 people that I employ is going to be based on whether or not people just want to hand over their money for something. I think in Star Citizen's case, people did. Because in the dream, you know, is real, and it's what everyone's wanted since, like, EVE Online got there and sort of did this thing where you're going to be a big shot, you're going to be in your own universe, you're going to be able to be seen as a big deal in this one world where you can be fully immersed in it, which is all anyone's ever wanted from sci-fi. You just want to be in it. But I think it can be irresponsible to do that. I just think Star Citizen's been in the complete right place, right time to be able to do that from the ground up and have people that were so passionate and believed so much in it that they are making it become a thing. And I mean, I've seen how it looks. It looks great.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's always looked mind blowing.
It doesn't look bad. If it would still look like
well, it's kind of like, it's nuts that like the Kickstarter was set off in 2012. It's like 1.5 console generations ago. Yeah. Like, it's back when we were all playing PS3 and 360.
Right,
and
the tech needs to evolve alongside, otherwise you're gonna, you know, it's not gonna look like it needs to look for the current generation. I think that's the problem they've been having across different things. But like, I mean, again, trying to make something that's both an FPS and a sandbox when it comes to space is incredibly difficult. You're doing with completely different physics, different world, different scenarios. If you're trying to do it all without changing what module you're in, again, the tech for that is completely different. And we saw with EVE Online and Dust514 how ridiculously hard it is to even link those two things together.
It's a minor miracle that they've managed to even get the single player stuff sorted, regardless of when they start linking it up with everybody else.
Yeah, and that leads you to the next question.
We did have another question. It was, there's the general, I was going to just say, what do you think they should do next? Or what do you think they'll do next? In terms of like, they have a little bit of buzz again now because something Star Citizen related is being attached to the word finished. And so it's like, do they finally just put that out and try and get that out, get the story things out there and have more positive reception or buzz around that and then work on the other half? Or do we just, is it another 10 years or 5 years or whatever it is until the whole thing is ready? Yeah. What do you think they'll do?
I think that they need to work out their pricing and how they're going to do that. It sounds super boring, but at the end of the day, when this thing comes out, if they're going to run it like live service, then they're going to have to work out how they're going to keep making money after that point.
It's like a weird, like, mythological release at this point. Like, it's been in Kickstarter, whatever, like, production for so long that it's, like, I think it is the longest running Kickstarter, like, in gaming anyway. Probably. Like, it feels like it. It definitely has, like, the general sort of reputation of just being this, like, big monolithic thing.
Yeah.
Like, there were so many of them for a time, like Last Guardian, Shenmue 3, Final Fantasy 7 Remake. They all came true, and then this was the thing that still just were waiting to see how the hell it finally emerges.
I just hope gamers behave. Like, I just hope, like, no, I really do, because, the thing that would suck more than anything else is that it comes out, people are like, I put all my money into this and it's not what I wanted it to be. But if you've been following it and you've been playing all the different little releases, then you know roughly where it should be.
Right.
I worry about people who did back it like 10 years ago or whatever, and then I've come back to it and I've gone, oh, this isn't what you promised me at all. I want my money back. And then like the massive pains that come with people wanting to do that and what the community team's going to have to, as a community professional, what the community team there has had to go through and will have to go through.
Yeah, navigating that, especially across, like I said, over like a one and a bit generations of consoles, the expectations that change over that time. Not to sort of like spotlight the worst takes on the planet, but I did see someone sharing something about the new Spider-Man 2, saying, oh my God, it's not remotely interactive. You can't go and get a slice of pizza from the vendor. You can't be walking to this building. It's like, that's kind of missing the point. I think that it is interesting though, in regards to Kickstarter, that idea of the game they're selling you, that like, invest in this thing, this idea that we have, and it's not remotely together yet. And then like, but we're going to get there over time. Then trying to manage that over time must be a Herculean task.
I think depth is different for everybody as well when it comes to the depth of a sandbox. Like, do you want like a million different planets to go to, aka No Man's Sky, or do you want to be able to go to a planet and pick an apple off a tree?
Right.
Both of these have completely different scopes. One of these is going to really upset an animator.
Definitely.
one of these completely changes the development pipeline of what you need to do and who you need to hire and what you need to program and for how many different iterations and skyboxes you need to make something happen or make a world happen or make something load. And again, I just think that's something that not a lot of people that haven't.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Gone into games development, think about when it comes to like, okay,
no,
you know, like picking up a pizza is actually a kind of a massive deal. Like, it's really like the biggest, like one of my favorite things, I forget who it is, a narrative designer says, like, he just like had on the notes, takes his watch out of a bag, and like it shat up an entire development team because they went bag.
I was just saying, the whole material of the bag moving. Yeah,
like you want to take something out of a bag, like when, like and literally the whole studio was just in flames because like, well, narrative designer said take something out of a bag.
Yeah,
it just like completely changes the scope of an entire like development cycle.
I remember, like, we mentioned dreams before, but it's like one of the things that they walk you through is the fact, like, the idea of giving an object from one hand to another, like a character passes something to another character.
Oh,
that
yeah.
can be a big thing in itself.
Yeah,
I mean, for the longest time, especially if you go back to older games, you can see it snap from one hand to the next or yeah. something. And that was like a whole thing that I feel like the likes of Naughty Dog and Uncharted and Last of Us really pioneered, this idea of like really fluid animation, kind of things like that.
Yeah.
And motion capture helped too. But yeah, even the smallest things can, like you said, the average person maybe doesn't realize how much of a big deal. And I don't know that either, but yeah. I think that's all part of that conversation on what experience did you sell? And then what do people invest in, and how much did they invest, and how long
each,
it goes on
each
for.
Each creep. So, mm-hmm, you know, if it's lots of, you're going to be able to do this, you're going to be able to have eight different leather jackets at one time, and you're gonna, you know, all of this stuff, like it sounds just like a fun thing to have, or like if we get 8 million, we're good, you're gonna be able to have a cat or whatever it is, like,
yeah.
But the result of that is again, like, how many features you're gonna have to say yes or no to during a cycle, and what things actually ship with again are gonna have to be completely different to what actually gets made.
I think it must be hard as well if you're on the campaign side of things, where it's like, well, we want to grant this dream a sense of life or whatever, and it's like, well, people are up for this idea, so we might as well say yes to all these different things and then see how out of control it gets. That's more of the Peter Molyneux approach, or it seemed to be the approach for Goddess, and then things get sliced down over time. Yeah.
And I remember at CCP, one of our like our little mottos was say no to features.
Right.
Because we literally had it on t-shirts.
Right.
Because we wouldn't get, you know, depending on how big, and especially if you're dealing with live service when it comes to shipping expansions, where they're all either about content or about bug fixing. I mean, like, and being able to spearhead the fact that this is a quality of life update as opposed to a feature update, which is now a thing, but wasn't a thing back then. Being able to say no to how many different features you put in a thing is pretty much what keeps studios afloat when it comes to multiple patches, and being able to iterate on content and make that content good if the last patch was broken or if something needs balancing, or especially in space games where so much of it involves ship balancing and weapons balancing. That's gonna, I mean, if your game is basically about ship balancing and warfare and being able to fight with your ships, ship balancing becomes a huge part of what you need to do and a huge part of what people will get upset about, because that's how they lose their items, and that eventually becomes what they care about the most. Because if you've put, and in this case, if you've spent like $100 on a ship and you lose it, and that was because something was balanced weird on the other ship, or you feel like a game designer balanced that other ship weird, so you've lost your stuff at the end of the day, you are going to feel a lot more passionate about that than if it was just something you had for free.
Oh yeah, I remember when, and we'll move on from this like as an overall point, because this is worth doing a whole podcast on, like the general, the realities of game design and things like that. And we can always do some Q&As from the community and people who are listening as well, because I think everyone has questions about the realities of how games come together, and we can at least talk like around some of the areas that those things involve. But yeah, that whole idea of how complex a game is. I remember when Fallout 76, actually, I think it was back when Fallout 4 was coming out, and Dave Lang from Iron Galaxy was talking on Giant Bomb on their podcast and just talking about how every game has a matrix of all these different parts that all interact with each other. And a Bethesda game's matrix is exponentially more complex than like a 2D platformer or something. And he's like, one of those little nodes on that, let's say call it a matrix, changes, but everything has to interact with everything else. And it's like trying to get all of that to knit together. It's like, it's a small miracle that Bethesda's games work at all, let alone like the reputation that they have, kind of thing. Like
that's
that's
a good producer.
And it's like, yeah, exactly. And it's like trying to like, get those things over the finish line and then polish a bit more later. But yeah, we'll do more on this stuff going forward, because I think the whole thing is like fascinating anyway. One news item though is Assassin's Creed. Insider Gaming reporting that the first details on Assassin's Creed Red, the first game set in feudal Japan, the artwork for that game has leaked alongside some character details. Two playable characters. One is a female shinobi, the other is a male African samurai, apparently based on a real life samurai called Yasuke. Insider Gaming also notes that Assassin's Creed Red will still focus on stealth, which is interesting because Assassin's Creed Mirage was kind of like a return to how AC1 was. I really like Mirage, but it literally is 2007's Assassin's Creed with some of the things they learned from the games in the early 2010s. But yeah, Insider Gaming say that you'll be able to extinguish torches, stick to the shadows, conceal bodies. It seems like a general stealth focus. So that's interesting, as like Assassin's Creed over the years, they sort of had the big Witcher trilogy of Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla.
What a time to
I know, like,
alive.
I'm weird with it, where I'm just like, I love the original Assassin's Creed like so much, and like I like that grounded feel, and I really like Mirage for it as well. But it was always that thing of the reality of Mirage being based off a DLC that, like, is this just a one off, or does this actually re-steer the ship? Is this what we end up going with? What do you think about all that stuff?
I think if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think there's certain things people do want from an Assassin's Creed game, and rewriting it isn't necessarily the greatest thing to do. It sounds weird, but I trust... There's a lot of things I don't trust about that studio, but that's for a different podcast. The being able to make a good Assassin's Creed game, I trust that they do that well, and they know why people want to play, and they know what makes that fun.
Yeah.
And we all know what what physics in that game is fun, and why we enjoy playing it, and what the gameplay loops are in that game that make it feel rewarding and cool. And the fact that they are so good at world building and creating these incredible scenes to make this stuff happen around. And I think that I trust them to do what they need to do. I think that if they want to experiment with different bits and gameplay, if either they want to stick to the way things were, I'm not fussed. I think that it's going to be amazing regardless, and they create useful stories.
That's kind of my thing, is the historical accuracy side of it. Like, I'd vaguely heard of Yasuke, but I don't know anything about like his story or whatever, so I'm curious about that. And then the general gameplay side of things, I want that return to stealth. I feel like the stealth genre is so barely populated right now, like across the last few years, like a dedicated stealth game. You got Assassin's Creed Mirage, and I forget the name of the Xbox games where you play as the girl and her brother. I'm completely like Plague Tale. Both of those are like dedicated stealth games where you're creating distractions and taking people out and things like that. And it's like, they're just so rare. Like, apparently we're getting a Splinter Cell remake, and that might kick off other stuff. But it feels like stealth games in general are just, stealth is mostly just go hide in the tall grass. That tends to just be what stealth is these days. And I'm up for a bit of a revival of the stealth genre. I've seen what we can do with it anyway.
Experimenting with that genre could be really interesting. I mean, wouldn't it be cool if like stealth games become like the new Battle Royale, and it becomes like the thing that everybody wants to do? I think if streamers, again, we're living in an age of streaming, right? In this, the age of the streaming influencer.
The age of the streamer.
And we know that horror games work really well with this stuff. Like, if you look at the Dead by Daylight community, and how much, hiding from things and running things around, how fun that is to watch. I think that's a thing that when the first Assassin's Creed, I keep saying Assassin's Creed, but I'm so used to saying it now. I'm sorry, guys.
That's fine.
I think that, you know, when the first lot came out, you know, what is it like to watch wasn't really something that got brought into question. But
no, true.
Perhaps with new stealth, it's going to become more of a thing. And I think that if they, and Ubi will, because they're great with influencers and with community, like mm-hmm. I think if they work with community members to really show how playing stealth can be super rewarding and fun to watch, I think that that can be really interesting, because I think a lot of the time for stealth, it's very much in your own brain and you're thinking about, I need to do this, I need to do this. It's not necessarily the most bombastic thing to watch. Mm-hmm. But it could be. And
that's a really good, I never even thought of it from that point of view. Like, yeah, the idea of trying to, because it is a very intense genre. Like, you should be behind enemy lines trying to figure out a different path through this series of enemies or something.
That's theatrical. Like, the whole tension of that is really interesting, as opposed to, we're just going to go and shoot. We're just going to go and shoot. Hi-yo, click sub, subscribe. Yeah, shout out to whoever, toast.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a very different thing to be like, okay, we're going to go around here. We're going to go around mm-hmm. and do this. You know, like, I think there's something interesting in that, and something theatrical in mm-hmm. That I don't think gets touched on a lot, but I think streamers have to clock onto that mm-hmm. and to make that fun. And I think it's interesting now when new gameplay mechanics get brought in to work out what actually works when it comes to marketing things to communities mm-hmm. versus, because I mean, the Assassin's Creed fans are going to play it regardless. How do you innovate to bring in a new audience, or how do you innovate to make that audience want to stick with something because you're showing them something or making them feel something they haven't felt before?
Yeah, plus, like, this is the most fan-requested location ever. Like, everyone always wanted them to do, like, a Shinobi-based Assassin's Creed,
yes.
something set in feudal Japan. I remember way back in, was it 2012 or 2011 for Black Flag? And one of the pieces of artwork that's behind the woman that's at the desk in Abstergo has one of the shards that comes off the artwork shows, like, looks like a feudal Japanese temple. I remember back then being like, oh my God, are they going to do this next? So we've been waiting a long time. So, like, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where Assassin's Creed, for me, like, having grown up and played all of them, like, I'm always curious what they do next. I've managed to play every single one of them. So even though I've had a weird back and forth kind of love of them, there are a set of core mechanics there that I really always just want them to keep refining. As like a Splinter Cell Metal Gear stealth kid, I kind of want them to do more of that stuff.
Metal Gear stealth kid.
So we'll see. Speaking of Metal Gear, the Master Collection's out today. This is just something I was going to just quickly touch on in terms of a general conversation on the way you want game studios to bring back the classics. Do we want them to do the Resident Evil 2s, do the Final Fantasy 7s, remake it entirely, or try and port stuff and just make that game available? Is that enough? Because the Master Collection is a really interesting approach to this, where they've just ported the old games. In some cases, they're worse, but it's very, very buggy, and a lot of the game's subtitles are off. Like, some of them are spelt wrong, and there's some stuff with the original Metal Gear Solid. When you play the new version, apparently it takes about 10-15 seconds to pause and unpause. Little things like that apparently will get patched. But ideally, that would just be a series of those old games made available, which is personally all that I want. I don't need you spending all this money remaking something. Right. I just want the library available. So that's where I am on game preservation. I just wish there was the Amazon Prime approach. It'll just give me this endless archive of stuff. and I just want to be able to play those things. But what do you want from your old things being made new again?
Again, a big believer in, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. However, I really like what they did with Monkey Island.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
So, like, you know, I be able to
click a button and go between the old and new visuals. Yeah.
So if I miss it, I can go back, and mm-hmm. if I can't, but I mean, aren't we being a bit needy here, Scott? Like, I feel like we are. Like, we got to remember, we're a certain age now. Where, uh-huh. You know, we're like, but I want it to look like it did.
It's got to look like it did when I was young.
When I was young, it took 8 minutes to load, and now it's straight. You're straight in there, and you know, We are not the focus of the games world anymore. And,
well, we should be.
I know. But I think that, you know, make more games in that world. I don't think you need to remake games. I think if you want to do, if you want to digitally remaster something, like, I mean, like, I don't have a problem. Like, this, I mean, this is the Star Wars argument. When they added aliens to Star Wars and everyone went bonkers about it and like, that's not my Star Wars or what, you know.
Aliens,
like,
or the little
CGI,
tiny one.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking. Everyone listening knows.
I was like, aliens were always in Star Wars.
No, like, yes, yeah.
I know what you mean.
But like, they added a bunch and there's stuff there, and it's like, you know, that's not there. You know, there wasn't that there when I was watching it as a kid, and mm-hmm. they changed the bits, and then they, you know, patch in an actor from the new one into the old one.
Put another rock in front of R2.
And you know, there's stuff there where it's like, from a dramaturgical perspective, Scott.
Very nice. We haven't got enough dramaturgical perspectives.
Well, I have a master's in dramaturgy, round these parts. You know, that's what I do.
Bust it out, mate.
Yeah, no, I am. This is what I'm doing right now. You know, from that perspective, there's definitely an argument to, should you be able to, can I swear on this show?
No, you can't. You can find a hilarious word to replace it with.
Should I be able to mess with old games?
There you go.
Because I want to show off what new tech can be made. Mm-hmm. Or should that game be preserved for, you know, what it was, what it is, and how, like, at the time, this was a huge piece of tech that was amazing. Mm. Like, the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. That should never be digitally... I feel like that should be digitally remastered because it was incredible for the time and still looks great. I'd be really pissed if they did. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that that should happen unless it's done respectfully. Mm-hmm. I think if it's about fixing bugs or fixing things that didn't quite work, then absolutely fine. Mm. And yeah, have things available, have everything available. If you've got a back catalogue of stuff that isn't problematic or, you know, for whatever reason.
For me, it's just the availability of it. Like, you can do the remake, you can make it more approachable for like, or change things for a new audience. But just like, I want to be able to play Burnout 3. Like, oh, I want to be able to go, you know, Def Jam 5 New York. Why is that not available on like some sort of archival service? And I think that's always something where the industry seems like it would rather remake it and charge you more for the remake. Or in the case of the Master's collection for Metal Gear, it's still £50 for the original, you know, versions of those games, and they are like, they're just ported across. In some cases, they run a bit worse, so they have more issues with the some of the bugs and stuff.
I mean, I think ports are underestimated when it comes to how valuable that can be. There is a bunch of games on PlayStation that I wish would come over to PC. Mm-hmm. Just gorgeous storytelling that we're missing, like absolute classics that we're missing on PC, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. That would, you know, like again, this is a game where it doesn't cost anything to port. Yes, it does. It costs a bunch of money to port. And there's got to be a good enough reason for it. And again, this goes back to boardrooms where you've got to make the ROI point about what's actually going to make money if we port something over. This is going to require this many people, this many graphic artists, this much tech research, redubbing, whatever it is, reanimation, new animation. You know, what is the ROI on that? Are we going to get the same people who bought it 10 years ago buying it again? Or is this going to bring in a new audience, or what that bottom line actually is? Mm-hmm. You can talk about whether or not you can or should or you want, but it comes down to what the point is from a business perspective from that studio, rather than just like, I want, you know, this game, but I want it to look good now so my nephew will play it with me. You know, I want Bug Hunter.
Give me Soul Reaver.
Bug Hunter was great on PC. Bring it back. Make it 3D. Professor Moriarty. None of the gameplay needs to change from Professor Moriarty. Mm-hmm. Just make it look like something my nephew wants to play with me, and then I get to play Professor Moriarty again. You know, like, you know, I get the want for that, and you know, it would refresh old games, but I think that there has to be more success cases of why studios benefit from doing that.
And I mean, when I was looking enough to talk to Ed Boon, like, he mentioned they haven't done a Shaolin Monks sequel or anything just yet because they wanted to, you know, add co-op or something like that to sort of modernize it. It's 1:45. Okay, well, we will wrap. I'm going to wrap this podcast a little bit early because we've got things going on, Steve. All sorts of things left, right, and center.
I'm very busy and important.
Very, very busy and important. But this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tailford. That's been Stevie Ward.
Bye.
Once again, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you very soon. Goodbye.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.